as a veteran.
Yes, ma'am. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today's interview is with Mr. Paul Lee and Ms. Patricia Baston. Ms. Baston is a grandmother who lost a grandson in 2012, and she's here on the show to tell her story. So how are you, Patricia Baston? How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. It's Bazed In.
Bazing. I apologize. Thank you.
No biggie. Well, I'm doing okay. I have my ups and I have my downs. But the family and I are getting through the loss. The incident took place on June 22nd of 2012. I was on active duty, stationed at the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. My oldest son, who followed in my footsteps, was also on active duty and stationed at Killeen, Texas, at Fort Hood. And I got the devastating call through Red Cross, and what really shook me up is that I actually answered my own Red Cross, and that's not supposed to happen to the soldier when they're getting word and news about a loved one who has passed on. So everything shut down because I never had the opportunity to meet my grandson. He was born in March of 2012. I only had maybe 2 or 3 days on leave on the books. So what I had decided to do is not take the 2 days and fly down there one day, spend one day, and fly back. It was just to go ahead and put in my paperwork and retire and then move down to Texas to help my son and his wife take care of my grandson. But had I known that I would never get that opportunity, I would have just took the 2 or 3 days leave and did what I needed to do. But my grandson will at least have the opportunity to meet me.
Now, when I talked to you in 2012, and I've talked to you since then, Ms. Baston, you were suffering.
That's correct.
So you didn't have insurance. And that was the main reason for me talking to you. You contacted me. So what was that like? Explain to people about the insurance. I understand that there was grief and suffering. But you also said that was a happy occasion to have.
So, at that time, yes, at that time, I did not have any insurance on my grandson. And my son did not get the opportunity to have insurance because Gabe was only 3 months old. So no one plans to put insurance on an infant immediately. We try to wait like 6 months to a year and then say yes. Eventually they will need a $10,000 policy just in case something happens. But since it happened so fast and it came unexpectedly, we didn't have anything to prepare for. The baby was born healthy. The dad went to work. The mom stayed home. She fed my grandson, burped him, put him to bed. She went down to go take a nap herself. She wake back up. She go to his room, and she found him not breathing. So, you know, when things of that nature happen so fast, it just catches everybody on guard. So by us living shoestring budgets in different states, 1,000 miles apart, I just thank God that I had Chase Bank because I have 2 cards with them. They both had low interest in regards to the cap of funds, but when I called them and said that I had an emergency, they increased my debt so that I can accommodate the $6,000 that I had to bury my grandson with.
Okay. All right. That was a hard time.
Yes, it's been in the heart.
Okay. All right. So, Mr. Paul Lee, you've heard Ms. Patricia Baston.
Yes, I did.
I know you started back some years back to Children's Burial Assistance.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Would you like to tell people what you do?
Yeah, we're a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we were developed in 2007. And, you know, I'm retired from United, I'm a retired United Way executive. And you know, I just thought that something needed to be done because we heard the cries of a lot of parents who, as Ms. Basden had mentioned, you never expect to bury a child. So we, you know, the families were trying to get money trying to raise money for the child's burial and funeral, and without many didn't have insurance. So as a matter of fact, the majority that called us didn't have insurance. So we started the organization, and it was very, very difficult because of the fact that I love children dearly, and I hate to see a child either mistreated, abused, and especially a child that has lost his life. So my heart goes out to Ms. Basden because I understand where she's going, where she's coming from, what she, well, really some of the things that she went through. What we try to do is provide as much assistance as we can. We started out with providing financial assistance up until February of this year for the funerals. But the funeral cost, as Mr. Basden had mentioned, her cost was $6,000, and that's for an infant. The cost is steadily going up. So what we looked at, we tried to find a better way to do this so we could help more families. And what we found out is that burial plots were very, very, the burial plots were expensive, including the opening and closing cost, of the cemetery plot. So what we decided to do, since we had a number, we had a burial plots all over the country. So what we decided to do was to help families again all over the United States because of the burial program we have, and we can give them a burial plot, and often we can provide them with some funding for the opening and closing costs, of the grave plot. So it's been a tremendous effort in getting these burial plots, and if people can donate, so a lot of families have burial plots that their parents bought for their family, and then the kids grow up and they have their own families, and they really don't want to use those plots. They have their own plots, so they decide to be cremated or go to a green burial. So the burials will sit there because the cemeteries won't buy them. They don't buy them back. So if a family can donate a burial plot to Children's Burial Assistance, they can receive the fair market value of that property and get a tax write-off for it. And we can provide that to a child that's in need of a burial plot. Our website is www.childrensburial.org, and you can email us at childrensburial, one word, no hyphen, apostrophe on the S, at gmail.com. If you can notify us of burial plots you may have, or, of course, we cash gifts also, that'll help us with the, with the cost of doing business. And help provide the opening and closing of the burial cost, the fee that they charge. We want to do as much as we can for these families because families don't need to go through this not having insurance because it's not that they neglect doing it, just like Ms. Basden was saying, that they waited until the child was at least a year old and then they wanted to go down and insure the child. But as we know now, and as we've assisted with the burial of over 4,000 children, 607, and we know that that's no longer true. Parents are burying their children, unfortunately. So insurance is a must. What we did, we have developed a program which we're getting funding. We're applying for funding now to kick it off, and hopefully we'll kick it off by December. It's called our Children's Burial Life Insurance Program. What that program will do is that we have an insurance company that we are working with that will write policies for us. And what we'll have is that we will do a pilot program in Georgia. We'll have families that will apply and we'll sign them on, and it'll be a mother or a father or a it cannot be a mother and father. It has to be either mother and all of her children would be covered, or father and all of his children, or guardian, or whoever is responsible for the child. And we will pay, Children's Burial System will pay for that for that first year, we'll pay 80% of that total annual premium. The parents will pay 20. The next year, it'll be 50-50. The third year, we'll go to 80-20, which the parents will pay the 80%, we'll pay 20. Then the fourth year, the parents will take it over. This will give them an opportunity to kind of work that back into the budget, because it's not a whole lot of money, because you're looking at probably less than $150 a year that will be that they will be charged for the insurance for their entire family, and it's a lot of benefits goes with that. So we're pretty excited about that, and we hope that we can we can now get to people and hopefully people who have who get into the situation that Ms. Basin went through won't have to go through it, because she went and had the expense of putting, $6,000 onto her credit card, and, that's an expense that she has to bear. And we really don't want that for a family, because a lot of families are not that fortunate to be able to even to come up with that kind of money. So we want to make sure that they have the insurance to be able to cover that child. And that's pretty much what we are about.
So it's called burial insurance. It's not life insurance, but burial. Yeah.
Well, it's life insurance. It's life insurance. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you have on your website, so I'm looking at here, you have the first 48 hours. Would you like to talk about the first 48 hours?
Well, a lot of parents, so we have a lot of young parents, and unfortunately, they're not able to understand, because they didn't expect to lose their child, of course. So they really don't know where to turn, where to go. If they don't have family in town or family they can call on, they're really at a loss as what to do first. So when we put up the first 48 hours, is to they can take a look at that and go through that process. And this is what the funeral homes also will suggest to the families that they do. And it's sort of in preparation, but you'll need to get someone that is not the parent, because it's very difficult for a parent to go through that process. They'll need someone to help them, another family member, someone that can help them through that process. But they need to look at some of the things we have that will go on in those first 48 hours of your child's death, and be diligent about it, so that the understanding that you don't have, especially the families that call us, that you don't have the funds, that if you have to raise the money, that might not be an easy thing. Then again, it could be in some families, but some families are very difficult. And if they can't raise the money, the next step is going to be us, which we'll try to we'll help them with their with the burial. That's and if if that's not possible, if they don't need our help, or we can't help them, then it's going to be indigent burial. And that's a program that the counties. And some states have their DFACS office runs that program. And what it is that it's for indigent people. In other words, folks that have nothing. They'll find bodies that they can't identify. Well, indigent burial will bury those bodies. And it's not the best thing that best funeral that you can that a parent wants for their child, because it's you sort of relinquish all of your rights to where the child's going to be buried. They bury them where they have space. You can't have a ceremony on the premises, and you can see it, but you have to see the burial from a distance. They won't allow you to come up on the because they bury several at a time. So it's not, it sounds cold, but when you don't have anything else to, you have no other funds to bury your child, and that's all you have, then that's what ended up happening.
All right, so that's about the first 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gibson Memorial. You said you accept donations and burial plots, and that they're tax deductible. How would someone get in touch with you?
Well, they can email
make a
us
donation.
And they can go online to make the make a donation. Via it's an online giving that we have. They can give online, and it's secured because it's PayPal, so it's a secured site. For those who want to give a burial plot or in kind gifts like that, I would prefer them contacting the office directly by dialing 404-207-2252. And they will speak to me or another volunteer, hopefully me, and I can go take them through that process of how to go to the cemetery provider and do the deed of transfer from them to us, and how that process will take place. So it's a very simple process, but at the same time, you're getting double. Getting double for your gift, because you're not only are you getting the tax write off for it, which you can, you are doing something for a child or for a family that can't afford a burial plot, and you are providing that for them. It's an everlasting gift.
Okay. Okay, so. So how long have you had the Children's Burial Company organization?
Well, the program was in 2005. That's when I, when my wife and I were thinking about the problems a lot of parents were having, and we needed to do something rather than sit by and say, oh, wow, that's sad that, people like Ms. Baston based and had to face what she faced. But what about the other families that are in real financial straits that can't afford it? And there were so many of those. We just decided that's something that we needed to do. And it was a challenge to us, and just something that God wanted us to put together. We did it. And we have, as I mentioned before, we provide all kinds of services. In other words, not only to help with the funeral at the time, but like I said, we're going now to really going to focus on all of our burials, and that's going to be a tremendous savings because the plots are going anywhere depending on the area, depending on the country. The state. You can spend in California. Most burial plots out there, which we have four. Fortunately, we're going through our campaign this year, our burial plot campaign, and we're going to really, really start trying to get burial plots in those areas. But in California, those plots are going, they're starting at about $7,000. And that's supposed to be a good price. So, this is going to help, a lot of these families. Just because they're already suffering with the loss of the child. And if you've ever lost a child, if you've never lost a child, you have no idea what people like Ms. Baston has gone through, the mental anguish that you go through.
Yes.
I'm sorry?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, you can't fathom the pain that Ms. Baston went through.
Okay.
And if you've ever lost a child, you will understand. I've never lost a child, but I've had a lot of friends who have. And the only thing I can do is empathize, and I just pray to God that I never lose a child. But it happens. So we would just want to be there to help those families, for as long as we can. Thank God we've been here for eight years in September. We've got 8-year anniversary. And, we really need the support of the community. Because the child is a child to us. We don't care where the child comes from, who the child is, what race the child is. It's a child. And that's one of God's, these are God's children. And we want to make sure that we do what we're supposed to do. And that's to help our fellow man out. And if there's anything we want to leave before we leave this earth, you know, everybody needs to leave something.
Yes, that is true. Okay. All right, so, Ms. Basin, understand you were talking, you were discussing about the loss of your grandson, if you know earlier. What did you go through? Did you have any depression or anything after the loss of your grandchild, and was it severe depression?
Yes, I did. Like I said, I was in uniform, so I had to go down from Washington, D.C., down to Fort Hood, Texas, to actually be the person that intervened on behalf of my son and his wife, because they were too distraught to handle those type of matters in regards to making their arrangements to have the body flown from Texas to Georgia, because we're originally from Georgia. Our home record is Georgia. And then once we leave Texas, get to Georgia, then make more arrangements to find a funeral home and try to negotiate the cost to have my grandson laid to rest with some decent memories behind it. But that took a bit of about 2 weeks. My company was not understanding of my needs at the time, as me being the person that shut down, so I won't break down and cry throughout the entire process. And instead of giving me an opportunity to return back to work and give me a couple of days off or a week off to regroup, they immediately put me back to work. And by what I mean back to work, that means everything that I left behind had grown 3 weeks or more, because I was responsible for processing packages to send my fellow comrades overseas into the war. So a lot of stress. I wasn't sleeping well. I wasn't eating well. And it just all came to a screeching halt in July, because I said, I can't do it anymore. I didn't get a chance to grieve. I didn't get a chance to say my goodbyes the way I thought I should have been able to say goodbye. And it just went to a down spiral from that point on. It started out as, I'm handling it. I can make it through. It's going to be fine. And then all of a sudden, the light switched on and said, it's not going to be fine. He was 3 months old. I don't understand. I'm a Christian woman. I raised my kids to follow God. I was baptized back into Christ back in 1999. I lived my life according to God's will. Every night before I go to bed, I always pray and ask him to protect my loved ones. And this particular day, he didn't do that. So he let me down. So that was another set of spirals going in at the same time. If I can't entrust God to take care of the precious, innocent life, who can I trust God with? So a combination of the both and not eating right, being stressed, led to a severe depression for me.
Okay.
And right to this day, I don't understand. And we're still coping and going through, but majority of my time now is talking with people that still don't have answers for me. So that brings on another set of issues like anger control. So we're just here one day at a time.
Okay. All right. So how is the mother and your son, how are they?
Well, because of the death, they grieved in their own way, so they wasn't able to communicate with each other. So my son is with me, and his wife is with her family, so they're not together anymore. They broke up that relationship. They don't even talk to each other, and when they do see each other, it's how you doing, what you've been up to, and gone about each other's way. As far as I know, my daughter Grace, which is my stepdaughter, she's doing well. She's a full-time student now and has a good job, and she's taking it each day like I'm taking it, one day at a time. With my son, he has completely shut down in regards to the loss, and he has never made any steps to getting the help he needs in order to cope through the loss. So he just DJ, going through life as DJ.
Wow.
Okay.
Can I interject something?
Okay.
May I? you know, that she brings up a good point.
Yes.
And that's one of the reasons that we have a database which we can call counselors in free of charge. These are grief counselors, and they sort of catch it before it gets to the point where her kids are, where they couldn't deal with it, because you know they too didn't know how to cope with that loss of the baby, but we've learned that if we can get these families, in which we do get these families ahead of time, to at least share some things with a grief counselor. These are professional people, but they're
grief
also grief counselors.
Okay.
And they will they will help them through, because they'll let them talk it out and talk out their feelings, but they will help guide that process so that they can begin to, because you can never make sense out of a death, but they will begin to process it to the point where it's not going to destroy their life, because that's not, I'm sure that's not something that their child would want them to do. So it's been real, real helpful with that. And I don't know whether you're, if they were able to get a hold of some grief counselors in this late date, but it would be a good idea to do that, because they really, really can. And I've seen them do some super work with parents that have lost multiple children. We had one case, a lady, she lost three of her children. So we were able to contact one of our resources, and they gave us, you know, they began to counsel this family, and they were able to eventually, like I said, you don't get over this, you know, in one day. It's just, it doesn't work. You know, sometimes you never get over it, but at least you can learn how to cope with it. So, I think if that was the case, she, you know, that might be a good idea to really push that to get them some help, because they loved each other when they were married. They had the baby, and that loss was so heavy that it just tore them apart. And that's understandable,
because
that will happen. So if they can get some help now, you'd be surprised. But especially with a grief counselor, one that's that's a good grief counselor, they can really, really do help the family out. And it's not just the parents, but you know, it's all of the whole family. You know, grandma and grandpa, they can help them deal with that loss, because the loss of a child is. The loss of anyone is devastating, but to lose a child is just unbearable. And I know what she's saying.
I agree 130%.
So I do pray that she will get that.
Okay.
Yes, because at that time there were 24 and 20. She was 20 and he was 24. So this coming June the 22nd would make 4 years. She is now 28 and she's 24. I had spoke with her about 2 years ago about trying to get her counseling, and she was open to the ideal, but we was having so many problems with finding a good grief counselor with affordable prices, because they did not have the insurance, the health insurance that would take care of, cover the cost. So majority of that would have been coming out of their pockets, and it was always getting that service. And with him being military, and so the military taking care of him, they gave him a hardship discharge and sent him home. So that's another thing that pissed me off, because he raised his hand, swore to defend the country, do or die. But yet when he falls down, they're not there to catch him, put him into a program to get him the help. They just sent him
home
with sleeping ulcers and mental problems. So, you know, it was kind of like.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Pauli.
Yes.
So you also have something referred to as Criminal Justice Coordinating Council. I've never heard of that. Could you explain to me what this is?
Well, that's just one of our resources, and what it is that we work with the coordinating council, criminal justice coordinating council. What it is that it's an organization that the state has, and if a person and in our case, if a child, which we have a lot of them. That are, you know, that if the coroner's office find that it was a homicide, then that's when the criminal, the justice folks come in, and they will provide, as a matter of fact, they provide an array of services. Most people don't know about them, and they're sort of out there. You can Google them if you know what you're looking for, because they don't advertise. And people that are funeral homes know about them, and they may or may not tell you because, you know, they have to, again, like defects, have to wait on their money. And some of them would rather pressure the families into using their credit card if they have one and pay it rather than waiting on their money from the coordinating council. So that's just another area. And what happens is that if they have a child that is suspected, that is a suspected homicide, then they'll take them through that process. And if they find out that it wasn't, then a lot of times they'll call us and ask us, can we help them out? Because of, you know, the family now, they can't, they will be eligible to receive any benefits from them. So now the family's on their own. So usually what we'll do, we'll help the family out with that.
Okay. All right. Okay, so that's wonderful. I don't know of any type of program like that here where I live at. That's why I was questioning you about it, not just for the listeners. There in Georgia, is it all over the United States, the Department of Family and Children's Services, DFS, you talk about social services.
Mm-hmm. Well, all of the
or is it just in Georgia?
No, it's supposed to be in every state. They should have one. You know, we've called some states, for the smaller states that don't have the program, but the majority of the states do have it, and it's a state funded program. But it's called different things in different states. So what they'll probably end up doing is finding out from the funeral directors, from the funeral home, if there's such an organization, state organization there in their state that will provide them some assistance because the child lost his life due to a homicide. And they'll tell them if there's a program available. It's just like the indigent burial program. A lot of those programs are closed down because of lack of funding, lack of county funding. So a lot of the counties in each county, just like in Georgia, each county in Georgia, they should have one. They used to have them, but I think now only about 42% of them now have them in the counties. So it's left up to the families now, because they just don't have them. And
okay.
On the other side, we collaborate with a lot of organizations. We collaborate with an organization called St. Vincent de Paul. I'm sure you probably heard of them. And we work together with them. They have burial plots also. And if we don't have a plot in an area where a family needs, wants a child to be buried, then we'll call one of our other collaborative organizations who do have burial plots and may have them in an area, and they'll give them to them. So, and vice versa, they'll call us. And so that's the way it should be, because we're working for the same purpose, and that's to help these families deal with the death of the child.
Okay. So the donations you take are cemetery plot, open and close of grave, vault, casket, headstone, make cremation service, and this is what people can donate. Doesn't necessarily have to be in monetary.
As far as the burial plot, that's an in-kind gift. But the other things, as far as the caskets and the urns and things like that, Those are monetary, so we'd have to purchase those. So if people can donate funds for that, then they can designate that. Say, I want this to go to grave marker. Then what we'll do is that we'll put that in a special fund for just the grave markers. So So when we have a family coming up and they need a grave marker or they need a headstone, which we don't get into a whole lot of that, because that's sort of I don't want to say luxury, but it's not a grave marker is a necessity for a gravestone.
Okay. So you also say people can volunteer, am I right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, we like I mentioned to you before about the counselors, we do have counselors that have volunteered with us to be on call for us. We have pastors that are on call. That if a family is not a member of a church, a lot of times we can get the church to hold the funeral services there, and the pastor will do the eulogy. So there's a and whatever a person feels that they can bring to an organization, or whatever skills they have, or other things that they want to do, they can we can always use it. We can always use them.
Okay. All right. So, Patricia Basin, how are you doing now?
Yes. Well, the pain is not as deep as it was at the onset of the death, because I have come out of my shell, so to speak, and went ahead and started sitting down and talking with grief counselors. Became involved with a group of parents who have gone through something similar to what I've gone through. So for me, depression and the loss is there, but the severity of the depression is not severe. I have my moments when I can be driving down the road and all of a sudden I think about him, because when he was alive, I used to get videos and pictures on a cell phone, and they're still on my cell phone. But I had to change the cell phone that it came to, because every time I saw that cell phone, I thought about him. So now I have a different device, but sometimes when I go pick up the phone and call my son, or to pick up the phone and go call a friend, ask them what they're doing, is that phone that keeps me close to the memories that I had of him, because I never got a chance to be with him. As far as my family, we're trying to live life. We do get down, especially around the month of June, around the month of the Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays, because that's when family is supposed to be together, and it's all about the kids. Well, the kid is not there, so it's hard.
It's hard, yeah. I can imagine I'm losing up. Yeah, the parents too, not just you, but the parents. Okay, your son. Okay. So,
yeah, my son just going to school full time and working.
Okay. All right. So, Mr. Lee, what is, before you won't be able to help the family, what is the age limit?
In the age limit, it's from birth. To 17.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I think it's wonderful what you're doing, Mr. Lee. The grief counseling, especially. Grief counseling helps. I kind of know what Ms. Basin is going through, but I'm not going to say it on the show, but I do understand something about grief and losing a child. So I do understand that. And even though, I know it's been some time, most of you should be over it by now. It's not always that easy.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, it's not that easy. I have a question for Mr. Lee.
Yes.
Okay.
If I wanted to send my daughter to you to get the grief counseling, is that information on your website or your webpage?
No.
Or do they have to call?
Yeah, what they can do is just to give us a call, and we'll do is that we'll find a grief counselor that's in that area, the one that you can they can talk with you. We'd be happy to do that.
Okay, I have her to give you a call then.
Okay.
right. So the average funeral, I believe this is for Georgia, right?
Yeah. Yes. The average cost
is, I believe, $3,500 to $8,000 for a funeral.
Well, it can be. Yeah. It can, and it really depends. And it depends on the family and what the family is trying to accomplish. A lot of families, you know, want to, you know, they want to have the full service funeral. They want to have the funeral car and the flower car, and they want the escorts, and all of that adds to the funeral, and to the point where they just price themselves out, and they really can't afford to do all of that. So usually there's several, and they'll see that in if they go online and look at on the first 48 hours, it'll tell them about immediate burials and immediate cremations, which are a lot cheaper. But it's just it's just what it says. It's immediate. You do this in the next several days, next few days. But the cost of that can fluctuate. Now, fortunately, we have we can get, you know, many times we can get a sometimes we can get a burial done at cost, and sometimes the funeral directors will even give us a pro bono burial for Beatty. In cremations, we can get infants cremated. For the organization getting cremated free, we know that families, a lot of families are not big on cremations, but a lot of the younger families are going towards cremation because of the exorbitant cost of the traditional burial, and also they go into green burials, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with green burials. We have two of them in Georgia. You are familiar with them? Yeah. Then we have two of them in Georgia, which they are, it's a beautiful ceremony, but there's no embalming. You can't embalm. You put any chemicals in the ground or any metals in the ground, so the caskets are biodegradable. Everything is biodegradable. And they dig the grave, and a lot of the few of those in some of the other parts of the country, they'll allow, if they're babies, they'll allow the parents to actually dig the graves themselves. And I thought that was sort of bizarre at first until I was told by one of the counselors that this prepares them, for this moment, and it sort of helps them in the grieving process. So that was, it's like I said, many families now, younger families, are going to cremation. So That's I did some research on that. It's been on the rise for the past 5 years, and because of the land cost is so expensive, and in New York and in California, they're really burying on top of each other because the land's so expensive, and they don't want to use it for cemeteries. So a lot of things are going into, and just a lot of things are going into play, and but the families need the insurance to be able to cover the cost. So we're hoping to get the families in that frame of mind and get them to put that in the budget, because I know when you don't have anything, it's like $1 million you got to come up with. But a lot of families that are receiving some services from DFACS or social services can put aside $5 or $10 a month to kind of pay for their insurance, and that thing is over with, and if a child happens to die, God forbid, then at least they'll have insurance to cover the cost, and they won't have to go through us and other people.
Yes, sir. Mr. Lee, we were talking about earlier when we went on the phone about life insurance.
Right.
You had said that people could purchase life insurance. I don't know how you decide who qualifies for the insurance, but you said that you were going to begin this program. I had already started.
I hadn't started yet. No, it hadn't started yet. We're applying for funding for that program. We don't see any problems with it, of getting the funding for it. But it's just, yeah, it'll give the parents an opportunity to have insurance, so that these situations won't pop up, and you know, and they'll have the funds to be able to properly bury their deceased child. And we're hoping to get this program kicked off. Well, we're looking at the early part of 2017, and we're going the selection process. We're going to go north, south, east, and west. We're going to start in Georgia, north, south, east, and west of Georgia, and it'll be publicized, and we'll be accepting applications for that for the program. And we'll decide how many. It's just going to be probably about 500 families. That we will we'll start with, and we're going to try to see if we can't do and that way because we have to have a time frame to gauge the success of it, and the success is going to be when the families continue the insurance coverage. It's such a wonderful program that this insurance company is providing. It's just unbelievable. I thought the Gerber was offering a lot, but this insurance carrier, it's called Foster's Insurance Company, and they are a nonprofit insurance company, which I've never heard of. We had one of my board members had some connections with them, and we were able to sit down and talk with them about it. But there's an array of services, and we'll be providing all that information once you get into the program. But they will have to do. We're not just gonna, because I don't believe in handing things out.
I understand that.
Yeah, I'm a staunch believer in assisting and helping people, and not enabling people. So what the parents will have to do, or the guardian will have to do, is that they will have to go on the website, or go on the webinar. We'll have a webinar where they can go on a webinar class, take a webinar class, and it'll teach them about. About life insurance, about the financial aspects of it, and that's what they'll have to go through in order to, to actually get into the program. And it's only one class, and then it's sort of given for life insurance for them to be into the program. Okay. And if they don't follow through with it, then we'll probably have 1,000 other people other families that want to get involved that will go through it. So in other words, the investment with the family is to learn how to maintain insurance on yourself as well as your children, and that's the bottom line.
That's the bottom line. Yes, it is. So in this day and age, in this time in 2006 March, May of 2016. There's babies coming out sick with lungs not completely deformed because of medications. I'm not going to name the medication, but we've all seen, I believe three people on this phone have all seen the commercials about how the babies are turning out. Some mm-hmm. even dying because of medications. So a program like yours is wonderful. It's a blessing. Because like I said, a lot of people don't have the money for that.
Right.
You don't have the money for insurance, the life insurance. So what you're doing mm-hmm. is great. And back in my day, the only thing I knew when I was younger, when I was like in my teens and young as a young adult,
mm-hmm.
all I knew about was SIDS. That's the only thing I knew, and maybe being stillborn. But I did not know of any babies or children who had died from medication that the mother
took. Oh, yeah. It's a lot of children.
It's horrible.
Ms. Bazin, I thank you for your service to our country.
Yes, sir. That's right.
We as an organization, because I am it really sickened me because we have a lot of military families that call us also, and that not that they are more important, but they take precedence over the families we have that are calling in. Because I have a deep respect. I never went into service, but I have a deep respect for those who have served us, because they didn't have to do it, and to come back to nothing. And we had families that that the military would bury the whoever the mother or the father was, was in the armed services, wouldn't touch the children if the child died. We had a lot of them that retired and couldn't get any veteran services for the burial, and it was so minuscule. So we really focused on we got some people at Veterans Administration and Veterans Affairs and some of the veterans organizations that we let them know that if you have families that are veterans that are either they have retired early or they need some assistance burial assistance for the children, that to call us. And those are the ones that we really like taking first. So because I again, it's a deep respect for you guys to sign your life up, to take care of us. And I want to honor you with honor those military folks with that. And
Yes, Ms. Mason. I too would like to echo what Mr. Lee said. You served this country, you protected this country. I don't know for how many years in the military.
I served 28 years, 8 months, and 18 days.
Jesus.
Okay, 12 years, is that what you said?
28 years, 8 months, and 18 days.
Yes, and I think it's awful the way the veterans are treated in this country. It's a disgrace. Veterans shouldn't have to wait that long for disability benefits either, let alone help with burying a loved one, a baby, a grandchild, a grandson. That is
exactly.
And it is sickening. It's sickening, but... But like I said, I thank you for doing what all the things you did to protect the United States of America. And I'm sorry that things are the way they are here in the United States of America with veterans. I really am, and it is sickening.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
We do have a lot of veterans. We have a lot of veteran families, that we've assisted. And matter of fact, we try to go even above that because some of the resources that we have. We couldn't list all of the resources we have on our website, but we do have resources for veterans. We connected with some of the veterans organizations. We're doing some wonderful things because the government's not doing it. So we really connected with them, and because of the fact that we have served some of some of the military families in helping them bury their children. We just extended that out to make sure that if there's anything else they needed and we had the resources, we'd share that with the families so they can at least get the resources they need.
Yes. That's wonderful what you're doing, Mr. Lee. Yeah, so, Ms. Mason, the 28 years that you spent in the military, and earlier in the interview, you said you were the one who answered the Red Cross call. That must have been pretty devastating.
Yes, it was.
Strange how the call got to you. Were you in another country or state? Well, not country. Were you in the same country in the state?
I was in the United States. I was at the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. And I was at work.
Pentagon.
I had just got to work. Had been at work for about maybe an hour or two, and I got a phone call and said, can I speak with your supervisor, and who is your supervisor's name? And I said, why are you asking me all this question? He said, my name is so-and-so. I'm with the Red Cross. and I need to meet with a supervisor. So I gave him my supervisor's name, which is Mr. McKnight, and I gave him Mr. McKnight's telephone number. And next thing I know, because the guy who called me didn't know that my supervisor sat two cubicles from where I sit, so I heard the call come in. And then Mr. McKnight answered the phone and said, do you have a service number working with you by the name of Basin? Because he didn't pick up the receiver and put it to his ear. He matched the speakerphone, so everybody couldn't hear it. So once he found out there was a Red Cross message from me, he then took it off the speakerphone and picked up the receiver and got all the details. He got up and went to my immediate supervisor, which is a military person office, and shared with them what had happened. And then next thing I know, within 5 minutes, they're calling me into their office to give me the bad news. But I had already known what the bad news was because I got a Red Cross message. And all the time we get a Red Cross message in the military is if someone's dead, someone's been hospitalized, and they're on their last breath. So that's when they contact the soldiers. So.
Okay.
But I just didn't know who it was. I didn't know who it was until they told me it was my grandson.
Okay, but you did answer the call. Okay, I just want to make sure I got that straight.
I did.
You did. Oh, okay. All right. I'm sorry, but I was just, yes, ma'am. Okay, you're a strong woman and a blessed woman.
Again?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
So you have some businesses of your own. Would you like to talk about them?
Sure. I am the owner of Basin Hope Zone, LLC. We are a vitamin supplement company that also provides certified personal training for the youth, adults, and senior citizens. I came back from a 7 year of active duty stitch only to find out that majority of my family members are overweight or obese. And when I started doing my research, I found out that they're not the only ones. About 68% of the citizens in the nation today are obese or overweight. So I found my next fight. So I started a company that would help give back to the youth because it's the parents that's making them fat, and they're the ones that are crying out for help. But the parents don't know how to help them. So therefore, I'm there to try to be that buffer in regards to educating the parents, in regards to staying fit, staying active, and how to prepare food differently. And then I would turn that hat to the side, and I sit on the executive board for Mundibeck American Legion Post 911, which is a veteran service organization here in Southwest Atlanta. And we do our best to try to assist our fellow comrades with putting together their VA claims packet so they won't be one of the ones like myself that comes out of the uniform and they don't get all they're entitled to. So every other month we host a claims workshop where they can come in, make an appointment, and sit down with the experts. And if the experts can't have them, then we have partnered with a VA claims attorney out of Stockbridge that's going to provide free service at the event. And if they decide that they need to take this service further, then they will give it to them at a discount rate. So I've been very busy since I've been back fighting governments in regards to DOD, Department of Defense, VA, which is the Veteran Affairs Administration, and SSD in regards to getting my benefits. Because if you Google search MSG Basin for Gordon WTB, you will see I was published in an article. Well, when I was getting ready to out process and transition out, I felt that they didn't do a just service to me. Because when I first got to the Wounded Warrior Transition Battalion, it was because of the severe depression that I had in regards to the loss of my son. So they were supposed to be that buffer for me to get me into medical programs and counseling. And then also be the ones responsible for putting together a thorough packet to go before DOD and VA and get a quicker, faster reply time in regards to ratings. I came in, went through the immediate process at the HAC level. The counselor there wrote in my package because I went back last year and got my records, and she had wrote soldier member, high risk, suicidal. But at the HAC level, they can only hold you for like a week, and then they transition you to a line unit. But when my records went to the line unit, the people that got the records didn't do anything in regards to getting me the additional service in regards to mental health or getting me tested to see if I need mental health They just went ahead and identified the areas that I got injured when I was in Afghanistan. So they focused the majority of their time on my knees, my lower back, and my shoulder. So then they pump you up with all these drugs. So for the first 90 days, I was in Zombieland. I could have signed over my first child and not even known it. So it wasn't until I started to pull myself and wean myself off some of these strong narcotics that I started going through my packing and saw that they had missed a whole lot of stuff. So then when I questioned that, being the E8, they don't like the E8s to start questioning E6s, E5s, and E6s work, especially when they're supposed to be the ones that are supposed to be doing the right thing. So when I got towards the end part of it and I started asking all these questions, that's when they were trying to get me out the door faster because they know I still had my connections to the Pentagon and all I had to do was just make a phone call. So needless to say, they pushed me out the door with 40%, and that's only $587. That's not even enough to pay my rent, which is $684, and I'm still unemployable. So I just thank God that I have family members that embrace me and say, if you need something, let me know. You always got a place or a room if you need it. So, you know, and I recently learned that Fort Gordon has been one of the WTB locations that has done injustices to thousands of soldiers. So as of August of this year, they're going to be closing that part down and transitioning them down towards Fort Benning. But, yeah, it's a mess. And then the wait time in regards to trying to do an appeal to try to get what they done wrong corrected. It's been 2 years since I've been out. I came out in December 2014. December 2016 will be 2 years, and nothing has changed for me.
Okay.
So it's kind of rough because the I raised my hand, put on my uniform, marched, did what they asked me to do. I come back injured, and they still refuse to take care of me.
Lord, that's horrible. But we've all seen on TV what's happened with the veterans being turned down, not getting adequate medical treatment. I assume Mr. Paul Lee has seen that too, the way the veterans are treated.
Oh, yeah.
The media,
yeah.
You know, a lot. Sometimes these things you don't want to know, but that was one of the things that was disgraceful too. The disability benefits with veterans and the medical care, the long waits. You know, that's horrible.
Well, the unfortunate part is that we take care of our animals better than we take care of our veterans, or
true.
Even our children.
That's true.
And our children are, you know,
and it's horrible.
Yeah, it is, and it's sad because you know we help any child regardless of their race or the color or their nationality, and we've had prospective donors who have told us that we don't want to bury this person next to we don't want a Mexican buried next to us or a black baby buried next to us, you know, and it's stupid. And it's stupid thinking, you know, and we tell them, you know, you better keep your money and put it somewhere where, you know, they'll adhere to that because we won't. But if it's a dog or an animal, they'll get all kinds of funding, and it's sad. We had a difficult time because we had so many of them at one time, and we were trying to help three veterans' family out with the burial of their children, and they were in different states. We had a friend of mine who was he's a SPCA director, and they had some little homeless dog. We were able to raise about $10,000-$15,000 per each area, and they raised about 100 for animals, and that just didn't set well with me because I'm saying, you know, you guys care more about your animals. I love animals, you know, don't get me wrong, but I still love my people first, especially for the veterans who sacrificed. Yeah. The veterans sacrificed what they did, and they can't get what they need to sustain themselves. It's just horrific. You know, it's a shame. You know, it's a slap in our face.
Yes, it is. So I have one or two more questions, then I'm going to have to end the show because my time only goes over 10 minutes from an hour. Like I said, 10 minutes. I just wanted to ask, are you nationwide?
Yes, we're throughout the
U.S. Just Georgia?
No, we had, at the first 4 years of operation, we were throughout the country. But the calls had, you know, they had just gotten so insurmountable. We rather than doing a disservice, we had to just back off and focus in Georgia until we can get a stable U.S.-wide program. And so what we decided to do, as I mentioned earlier, that we decided to go, you know, with providing burial plots as a focus of our of the organization services that we provide. Then that puts us back out in the U.S. So families that that are in you know, Pennsylvania or in Florida, even in Midwest, we have burial plots there. We have our partners have burial plots there. We can get burial plots to them, and then a lot of times we can pay for opening and closing. So yeah, we are now back out throughout the U.S.
Okay, all right, that's wonderful to know, Mr. Lee, and God bless you. Ms. Basin?
Yes.
Ms. Basin? This is Angela again.
Yes, I'm here.
I just want, yes, ma'am, I just want this is Mental Health Awareness Month, so I'm glad you were talking about depression also, because this is Mental Health Awareness Month, and some people are not even getting help with mental health. I'm not saying you are permanent, you know, depression, but there are people who are. We have bipolar depression,
correct,
major depression, and they have a hard time. So I'm going
to
go ahead and pretty well close the show. I thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
For coming
on
Show Talk with Angela Butler. And I thank you, Mr. Paul Lee.
Thank you so much.
And everyone, his website, Mr. Lee's website, it's children's, childrens, children's burial, burial.org. This show will be re-aired tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So thank you, Ms. Basin, and thank you, Mr. Paul Lee.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, everyone, you've been listening. Thank you. Goodbye. You've been listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Once again, Ms. Patricia Basin was on the show, and Mr. Paul Lee. I want to remind everyone that this is the month of May. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So people who know someone who is mentally ill, NAMI is having several things for the mentally ill to let people have more awareness of nothing, because it's Mental Illness Awareness Month. So I just want to say this also. Mental illness is a sickness, just like diabetes, high blood pressure, arthritis even. To me, a mentally ill person is really no different than anyone else that has a sickness. They need medication too. It doesn't mean that they're crazy, being mentally ill. A person is crazy just because they take medication. They have to take medication just like a person with high blood pressure or diabetes, like I was saying. It's an illness. And the other illnesses can be controlled, social mental illness. A lot of times it can be controlled. So everyone, go to NAMI, N-A, the National Alliance for Mentally Ill, N-A-M-I, either .com or .org. And go to their website and find out, you know, more about mental illness. And you'll learn that it is a sickness. And it can, a lot of times, be controlled with medication. All right, everyone. Have a good night, and I will hope to talk to you all again tomorrow night.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.